Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
It is the first of its kind, and I'll kind of go back just a little bit. In the 2017 Census of Agriculture, we asked about a series of practices that may be on certain farms, and because U.S. agriculture is so diverse, necessarily diverse, and we ask a question about practices of alley cropping, silvopasture, forest farming, or riparian forest buffers or windbreaks.
Joe Parsons is with the National Ag Statistics Service on a new National Agroforestry Survey.
And so this study, which we're doing in conjunction with the National Agroforestry Center, which is a partnership of the Forest Service and NRCS, or the Natural Resources Conservation Service, we're going to take a little deeper dive into that question and better understand it. And for these data to really inform programs and policy to benefit both landowners and farmers, as well as the environment.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What's underneath that and why some think it might be a full 2% or even a little bit more is the commentary of producers to the west and a little bit north of here, some North Dakota, California, and the like, that had month after month of drought concerns. There's well-documented choline pressure that's occurred there. That certainly would be towards the 2% or more story.
That's Kansas State livestock economist Dr. Glenn Tonzer talking about the cattle inventory report from USDA released on Monday.
But the reason I give pause on that sort of being a foregone conclusion is there's an awful lot of cattle that are in Texas and the Southeast and so forth that, you know, it's very much a national industry when we talk beef cows. So it's worth watching not just the total aggregate, that's where I'm telling the story initially, but the state-by-state breakdown, because that speaks a lot to where the calf crop's going to be coming from the next couple of years. It has a lot to do with your feeder cattle basis, for those of you who are listening outside the state of Kansas and the like.
So with USDA's final number on Monday, 91.9 million head of cattle and calves on the U.S. farms as of the first of the year, and that equals 2% lower of the 91.9 million head inventory. All cows and heifers that have calved, totaling 39.5 million. There are 30.1 million beef cows in the U.S. That's down 2% from last year. Number of milk cows decreasing 9.38 million. U.S. calf crop estimated at 35.1 million head, down 1% from last year. And all cattle on feed, 14.7 million head, up slightly from 2021. Again, that's USDA's cattle inventory report released on Monday. Well, out on Tuesday morning, it's the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, and farmer sentiment weakened in January, according to that report, declining 6 points to a reading of 119. That's the second lowest reading since July of 2020. Now, the index of current conditions falling 13 points to a reading of 133, while the index of future expectations changed little in January, down 2 points to a reading of 112. Rising farm input costs and ongoing supply chain disruptions appear to be contributing to producers' weaker perception of current conditions and expectation of their farm's financial performance this year when compared to last year. That's according to Dr. Jim Mentert, who is the director for the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue. He says the Farm Financial Performance Index fell sharply in January, a 30% decline compared to a year earlier, and 27% lower than the month prior. The financial index is generated based upon producers' responses to whether they expect the farm's current financial performance to be better than, worse than, or about the same as the previous year. Now, in that December survey, producers were focused on comparing a very positive income year, 2021, to 2020, which really did support the index at year-end. But in the January survey, producers asked to compare 2022 to 2021. Therefore, the sharp drop in the financial performance index indicates that producers do expect a sharp decline in income this year. And obviously, supply chain concerns extend beyond farm machinery and farm building, grain bin construction plans. Disruptions in the supply chain for many farm inputs, coupled with strong demand, pushing production costs higher. 57% of survey respondents said they do expect farm input prices to rise by 20% or more this year. 34% expect prices to increase by 30% or more. It's Agriculture Today.
The advantages that we have to provide financial services in the ag is top-notch. It's the best in the country. We have a capital management plan that we all celebrate and hold very close to us at Capital Farm Credit. And that capital management plan is premised on the fact that we're a cooperative. So as a cooperative, we believe that the members of the cooperative own the capital of the cooperative. At Capital Farm Credit, together, we're better.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
We in the environmental policy world love a good acronym, and the FRRCC stands for, like you said, the Farm, Ranch, and Rural Communities Committee that advises the EPA administrator on policy issues that specifically impact the agricultural industry and rural communities across the country.
That's Mary Thomas Hart with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
In the past, this advisory committee has addressed, voluntary conservation, water quality, kind of private market trading questions, but have never really been charged with addressing issues that are kind of at the core of what the agency does, right? So that changed a couple of years ago when the FRRCC was kind of called back to join and put together some recommendations specifically related to three topics. The first was water quality. The second is food waste. And the third is kind of broad, pesticide recommendations. And we recently got a report from the FRRCC that makes recommendations in all three of those categories. We were very excited about all of the recommendations, but I think, we're especially happy to see that advisory committee make some specific recommendations related to EPA's definition of WOTUS.
She talks about the focus on waters of the U.S. or WOTUS.
So that report outlines a few specific WOTUS recommendations. And I think, they really all align with what NCBA has been saying to the agency for the last few years, right? We want to make sure that EPA's WOTUS definition aligns with Supreme Court precedent. And that seems like common sense, but, I think in the past, we've seen the agency really try to stretch its federal authority. And so NCBA has been really vigilant. And I think the FRRCC is kind of also taking a stand to make sure that however EPA chooses to define WOTUS, that it aligns with Supreme Court precedent. We want to make sure that that definition is clear, right? And that if you're a farmer or rancher, you can easily interpret the definition of WOTUS, that you can go out to a jurisdictional feature or a potentially jurisdictional feature on your property and at least make a preliminary determination about whether that feature, whether activities around that feature will be subject to permitting requirements. We want clarity in the law. And that's also something that the FRRCC highlighted in its report. I think a key part of the 2021 proposal from the Biden administration to rescind the navigable waters protection rule and kind of reinstate what it's calling a baseline approach, a really kind of no additional interpretation, just, kind of following what's already on the books definition of WOTUS. One of the most significant absences from that proposal is the lack of agricultural exemptions. Those were things that we saw in both the 2015 and 2020 rule. And making sure that we have those agricultural exclusions is so important for farmers and ranchers across the country. And that was something that the FRRCC report highlighted as well. And then finally, maybe more of a procedural issue, but we want to make sure that the EPA roundtable process, what it's doing to hear from stakeholders, actually gives stakeholders an opportunity to provide valuable input. So there have been some concerns about the regional roundtable process and really the agency putting the burden on regulated stakeholders to make their voice heard instead of making themselves truly accessible. And they've tried to remedy that. We've had a few virtual listening sessions, but I think that the FRRCC making those recommendations related to the process is really important.
It's Agriculture Today.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement semi-annual sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, as an economist, I look at things from a marginal benefit, marginal gain point of view.
That's Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien on getting fertilizer for corn.
And even if people were able to get enough high-priced nitrogen fertilizer for their corn to plant to their recommendations, what's lost now, I think, will be any normal 5 or 10% excess factor that people had that position them for, hey, maybe tremendous weather would come along and we'd get more yields. And a lot of disagreement amongst people in Kansas as to whether folks are caught short on their fertilizer or not. Did they get adequate supplies and had already put that in the ground in the fall? Or did people step back and decide they weren't going to pay those high prices and re-enter that market in the spring? And just a surprising amount of disagreement as to what actually happened. We actually need a survey on that, but if we did, nobody would probably answer it because of neighborly considerations and all of that.
Now, all of this adds up for a bullish story for exports.
The problems that we are seeing in the soybean market in South America, well, they're continuing, and they're rolling over from soybeans over to corn with at least questions about what will happen there. And it shouldn't be forgotten that as Russia and Ukraine have their issues that they're potentially in conflict over, or at least throwing a lot of dust in the air, that China has gotten an awful lot of its corn from Ukraine. So what an interesting dynamic. Here you have China having built solid trade ties with Ukraine in an effort to not be so dependent on the United States and some other suppliers, or at least to diversify their supply base for their imports. So you have that happening. At the same time, you have this move on the part of Russia to exert some control, I hope I'm not saying that wrongly, over Ukraine. So what a challenging situation. Of course, the politicians are involved. They have public statements one way or the other, and diplomats being recalled and all manner of issues. But the big point is that you look at the wheat market, anything that happens in the Black Sea area that disrupts trade is a big deal for wheat. And part of the reason why we're seeing on a down day, 790, well, a close of 793 and a half. And that's on a down day, down 22 cents for hard red winter wheat. And it just shows the strength we've been having in that market. So you have that part of that international equation, and still questions of where U.S. trade is going. We just add a couple things. The pace of corn exports has jumped, partly because of these same issues. We had a week ending the 20th of January of 56.6 million bushels, and that's actually ahead of the pace for about one of the first one or two times that for these weekly numbers that we've been watching, ahead of the pace to actually meet the USDA's projection. So that's a big deal. You're looking at potentially tighter ending stocks if that sustains. For soybeans, 59 million bushels a week, and I need a pace of 23 some to meet the USDA's projection. So that looks like it's going pretty well. On the wheat side, you had for all U.S. wheat exports of about 13 million bushels. We need actually 21 to meet the USDA's projection. So that's the conundrum of wheat. The prices are wonderful, but the export pace is okay. I would add for hard red winter wheat, where we're at in our part of the country, 4.7, 4.8 million bushels this week. We need a pace by my calculations of about 9.2 to meet the USDA's projections. So you've got a strong but risky market, strong in the wheat based on international worries and concerns, but the actual underlying performance is okay, but we'll have to pick it up to actually meet the promise of the market.
It's Agriculture Today.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight, simple, sold.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from America. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Ag Economy Barometer declined 6 points this month to a reading of 119. That's down from 125 last month and well below where it was this time last year.
Dr. Jim Mentards, director of the Center for Commercial Ag and heads up the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer.
The decline in the barometer this month was really driven primarily by a decline in the index of current conditions, which declined to a reading of 133 versus 146 a month earlier. There was almost no change at all in the index of future expectations, coming in at a reading of 112 versus 114 a month earlier. The Farm Financial Performance Index declined sharply this month to a reading of 83 versus 113 a month earlier. However, the results this month were heavily influenced by the fact that this month producers were asked to compare 2022 to 2021, whereas in December they were comparing 2021 to 2020. This month's reading really indicates that producers expect 2022 performance to be significantly below where it was in 2021. The Farm Capital Investment Index declined slightly this month to a reading of 45 compared to 49 a month earlier. But if you look at the index, it's really being heavily influenced by the supply chain disruptions that have taken place. 43% of the producers in this month's survey say that their purchase plans are still being impacted by low farm machinery inventory levels. Problems with supply chain disruptions extend beyond just farm machinery. 28% of corn and soybean producers in this month's survey say they've had difficulty purchasing inputs for the 2022 crop. Inputs they've had trouble purchasing range from herbicides to insecticides to fertilizer, as well as farm machinery parts. Nitrogen is a key input for corn production, and prices for nitrogen have tripled since this time last year. When we asked producers what their plans were for the use of nitrogen on the 2022 crop versus 2021, nearly 4 out of 10, 37%, said they plan to reduce the rate of nitrogen they apply to the 2022 corn crop. For the third month in a row, the long-term farmland value expectation index declined, this month to a reading of 145, down 7 points from last month's reading of 152, and well below its peak reading of 161 from last fall. We followed up with the producers that said they expect to see farmland values rise over the next 5 years and asked them what the main reason was they expected to see an increase in values. 45% of them said it was because of non-farm investor demand, and 32% said it was because of inflationary pressure.
We segue from the Ag Economy Barometer over to the cattle markets last week. Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer.
There's a mixed story depending upon what class and where we're talking around the country and even cash versus futures. So I would call this past week a mixed bag. AMS called fed cattle at 137 this past week. For context, the nearby February live cattle contract was just under 139, up about $1 for the week. Not a lot of action there. So to your point, that's kind of steady she goes. Flip over to the feeder cattle, and this is where my mixed bag comment would come from. Dodge City Wednesday report, it was steady to full $8 higher, depending on what weight class. The majority of weight classes were little to no change, but there was some that were 5 to 8 higher. Two lots, just for context here, 193 head weighing 727 went for 161, and 231 head weighing 788 went for 155. Those would be much better than a year earlier for those that are tracking, you know, longer-term trends here. But that story's a little different when we look over the board. So March feeder cattle closed just below 160, down about 350 on the week. One of the reasons, I think, is we saw corn inch up this past week. So corn was up 20 cents. And there was a lot of general commodity and equity market turbulence this past week. That's not a doomsday comment saying it's going to go on forever. Don't overreact to that. But I think some of the more actively traded commodities and feeder cattle contracts would be in that space within ag, at least, probably got some downward pressure from that. So I think there's some very short-term reasons that the board was slightly disconnected from cash on feeder cattle this past week. I would look for them to kind of come back in sync a little bit more in the next couple of weeks.
It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
AquaYield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
This is Agriculture Today.
One of the upsides of having serious human health problems like we've had is that a whole bunch of science resources get directed to that. And plants are, in many ways, they're just cousins of humans. They're distant cousins, but many of the detection tools and the that have been created for the pandemic, those transfer to plants. And many of the tools to improve human health transfer to plants.
Dr. Cader Haake is Vice President of Ag and Environmental Research with Cotton Incorporated.
I'm super excited about all of the wonderful science that's literally cost billions of dollars for human health that now can be transferred to crops and at a, just an absolute fraction of the cost. Because, as you know, once a smart idea or an innovation is created, to utilize that costs a fraction of what it is to create it. And obviously, the detection is a no-brainer. You know, the ability to do a nasal swab at home is just awesome. And so those kind of technologies will be really helpful for consultants and farmers and trying to understand what's going on out in the field. And, you know, for instance, one of the ones that I'm excited about is the ability to measure in the air what's going on in plants. We've got spore traps, and the science is moving along that you can now look at the DNA floating around in the air and see what's going on in terms of the plants and the weeds. And every time a tractor goes through a field, you know, one could sample what's in that field from a spore trap aerial standpoint. So those kind of sciences are coming along.
On the future of gene editing.
The one that probably is going to be the biggest game changer is the ability to gene edit plants. And those people that have been following this in humans, the ability to CRISPR, and people have been looking at how to solve blood problems where you have a genetic inherited problem in your blood or something in your liver. And those are being addressed with gene editing, not as a permanent for all your children, but to solve it for you in your lifetime. And those kind of technologies are ideal for crops as well.
But remember, gene editing is not genetic modification.
GMO is taking a gene from a totally different organism, like a bacteria, and putting it into a plant randomly. You drop it in and see what happens, and you do that enough times, you end up with a BT cotton or a BT corn. And that has a huge regulatory burden globally to get that done, to make it commercially available. Well, gene editing is going in and recreating exactly what happens naturally. You know, the mutations occurring all the time in plants, in our skin, and in viruses and bacteria. And those mutations that happen randomly, we can now direct where they occur. And that's what's called gene editing. And it comes, in the U.S. at least, with a greatly reduced regulatory cost, because the regulatory agencies say, well, you get to the same point as you could get just using traditional old-fashioned methods. You just get to it a lot more precisely and faster. So why should it cost more regulatory burden to do it faster when the endpoint is the same? So that's the difference on gene editing. You know, you're going in and recreating what Mother Nature is doing all the time. You're just doing it in a directed way.
It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Making contract highs for the March 2022 contract. Chartists pay close attention to where high prices had been in the past. And here back in late May, early June, we got up to just under 1448, thereabouts, 1446. And we beat that here actually on yesterday's close. So,
now, Dr. Dan O'Brien is a grain economist at Kansas State, says soybean markets are affected by South American weather.
And as we closed in soybeans at 1448 and a quarter. So pretty strong markets, really questions of where all this goes. A combination of factors such as dry conditions in South America, Argentina, Brazil, Paraguay, and actually Paraguay has a larger percentage hit based on the USDA numbers than even those other two. So I guess that those issues, the issue of weaker competitive position from export competitors in terms of just available supplies on the one hand, and add into that questions about soybean acreage, soybean and corn acreage, with really vacillation, I guess, is a nice polite word to say for people going back and forth guessing from various private sources what acreage of corn and soybeans will be. Initially, without even blinking, we were looking at expectations of, say, 3+ billion acres to be planted this year. Now you've had some other farmer-based surveys, farm futures, et cetera, that have moderated that a little bit. It is quite the question to ask if we are going to plant lots and lots of soybeans, and why did we have this big battle over fertilizer prices for corn, and other feed grains.
Now, Brian says oftentimes we'll look at ethanol prices as far as what ethanol itself as a product is worth. But he says when you start looking at what ethanol plants are paying for feedstuffs,
the strongest in the United States. We have, based on the report for Thursday, January the 27th, that the range of prices at Kansas ethanol plants was $6.42 to $6.69, and on the high end, the next highest state was Nebraska at a low of $6.07, $6.57. Some other states, Missouri also at $6.22, $6.62. So it seems like that between Kansas and Missouri, that we over time have been having some pretty strong ethanol plant numbers, but I wouldn't say we're in the center of the ethanol world at all. No, that's up in Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota, southern Minnesota. And you're looking at prices in Iowa running from a low of $5.92 up to $6.41. And we also have the strongest DDG prices in the country. And now, if you're a livestock feeder, you may not be that happy about that situation, but yet we have that stronger demand is where that comes about, given our feedlot sector. Dry 10% distillers grains had a price range of $275. The next highest numbers on the high side were, I think, $249 on the high end in Missouri and $235 in Nebraska again. So anyways, general indications that Kansas ethanol plants are still functioning, still going forth. There's some worries about accumulation of stocks and some slowdown in the profitability in those plants. And that's no doubt true. But at least as we look in our neck of the woods around Kansas, we're just by indication of what plants are willing to pay for corn and what they're selling their byproducts at, there's still a pretty strong, hot, healthy demand going on around in our state.
Kansas State grain economist Dan O'Brien. It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
It was 1985. Ronald Reagan was president.
Thank you all for the Herculean effort on behalf of America's farmers.
The effort was the 1985 Farm Bill creating the CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program. At the time, few of us thought it was going to be a permanent thing, but here we are 37 years later announcing
the upcoming CRP signups.
Yes, Zach Ducheneau runs the USDA's Farm Service Agency, and he says sign up for the general CRP is set to start this Monday, the 31st, and will run through March 11th, with the grassland CRP signup starting April 4th. Now, when President Reagan announced the brand new CRP, its main objective was to pay farmers to take marginal land out of production
so that you don't have erosion.
Today, an additional objective
to help mitigate climate change.
Now, the law limits CRP acres to a max 25.5 million. Zach Ducheneau says enrollment currently is a bit over 22 million.
So we've got some room to grow the program a little bit.
The goal is to reach that maximum acre limit this year. Gary Crawford, Washington.